Our first reading this morning is taken from Matthew chapter 3, beginning to read at verse 13. We hear of the baptism of Jesus. Then Jesus came from Galilee to John at the Jordan to be baptized by him. John would have prevented him, saying, "I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me?" But Jesus answered him, "Let it be so for now, for it is proper for us in this way to fulfill all righteousness." Then he consented. And when Jesus had been baptized, just as he came up from the water, suddenly the heavens were open to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending on him like a dove. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased." And then we read from Galatians chapter 3, 23 to 29. Now, before faith came, we were imprisoned and guarded under the law until faith would be revealed. Therefore, the law was our disciplinarian until Christ came, so that we might be justified by faith. But now that faith has come, we are no longer subject to a disciplinarian. For in Jesus Christ, you are all children of God through faith. As many of you as were baptized into Christ and have clothed yourself with Christ. There is no longer Jew or Greek. There is no longer slave or free. There is no longer male and female, for all of you are one in Christ Jesus. And if you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's offspring, heirs according to the promise. This is the word of the Lord.
Baptism is such a big part of our understanding of the church as a Baptist church that I was quite tempted to make you all get up and us all go and stand around the pool here in order to think about it. But you'll be glad to know I drew away from that. I hope all of you at some point have had a chance to actually see or been and had a peek in it. I often take some of the children that come in here on a Wednesday morning up here to see our swimming pool. And they love it. I was tempted at some point to put the squishy balls from in the ball pool into the baptistry pool so that there's a health and safety thing in that, I think, in that it would make it a much softer landing if they fell than what's there at the moment. But I haven't done that yet. It's quite a powerful image for us as we come to think about Jesus' baptism. On this journey through Lent that we're making, trying to understand who is this person that when we reach Easter, we will celebrate his death and his rising again, and yet so much more than that. The life well lived, I suppose, is what we're trying to learn from. So as I began to think about this, all the things that you could possibly say about baptism, in the end, it was what's been around me that has been in my mind most. In the last month, I've been glad to be able to sit and look out and watch the sea in a number of different places. Some days it's been still and calm. Others it's been wild and rough. The tide has followed its own pathway in its own good time, and the waves have crashed onto the beach in a relentless, greedy search for anything it can sweep into its depths. Water is a powerful image in the Bible. If you remember the creation story that we talked about, and the day of the firmament when the waters are put into their place in order to create space for the green and growing things. Or Noah, and the story that key element to life is holding back the waters of the flood receding and new life being able to grow. Placing boundaries on water, enabling space for other things to grow. We need water. We're mostly made up of water ourselves. I throw that bit in for the scientists amongst us. It symbolizes everything from being clean to quenching thirst to holding the great sea monsters of ancient times that mariners were both afraid of and set out to conquer, hence the Moby Dick film that was just redone. It's a source of food and work and transport. In the New Testament, there are a number of stories about water. Jesus calms the storms when the water is going to overwhelm the disciples. He walks on it and tests their faith with it. Mostly, water represents something that's uncontrollable and chaotic. It's full of fear for people, and yet it also remains the source of life. Once Jesus met a woman at the well in Samaria, and her journey towards the living water that never runs out began, which is about finding one who restored her trust and hope and gave her back a place in her community. In that sense, the water that brought her back to life again. Not just some internal spring, but in every way, her life was transformed and given meaning. So water is about life-giving. And all the fears we face about the unknown, the feeling overwhelmed, the being swamped, the depths and the darkness. Water is still a powerful image today for us in our news. We can't begin to imagine what it's like for those risking their life on the waves to reach an unknown shore, thrown to the mercy of the sea in the hope of safety, escape, new life. Yet we rely on the sea for transporting massive shipments of goods and people. And of course, I understand once you've been on a cruise, you're hooked. Although I still can't imagine it myself. All that is to say, we have a kind of love-hate relationship with the water, always seeking to harness it and constantly reminded that it's uncontrollable. So much of the symbolism is about life and death. It's in the setting of the boundaries at creation that order begins to enable life to flourish. And the powerful effects of when the waters overstep their boundaries, they remind us of our smallness. We can do amazing things, and we can be so powerless. Jesus comes to the River Jordan to be baptized in the water, to be immersed, submerged. He completely disappears from eyesight as the crowd watches and then rises out of the water to receive a blessing for all that he is embarking on. Life and death are there in those waters. His birth and his death, as well as all he will accomplish as he walks and talks in the streets around Jerusalem and Galilee, calling people to leave their work and their money and their religion, because there's more to life than that. Much more. Because it's also life beyond all the death. Resurrection life. When Jesus comes to the water to be baptized by John, it's like the moment when he chooses, he accepts, he embraces what has already happened to him in his birth and his growth. He is living. This one that we believe came from God. He is fully part of life, which includes the suffering and the death, the limitations imposed by our human power structures and community, the boundaries, if you like, of our human existence, are acknowledged by Jesus in a kind of bring it on moment. And baptism into water has always since marked for those who follow Jesus that kind of moment when a decision is made about life. The water symbolizes life, and the decision to be immersed in it is a choice to accept what life brings, just as Jesus sets out to do his Father's will. But not just a passive decision. Something that we have no control over. The choice is to be active within the stuff that washes over us. The choice is one of life over death. For example, it's the difference between law and faith. With the law, we have to obey, and if we don't, there are consequences that are beyond our control. It's a boundary that's been set. Sometimes it's a good one, an important one. And there are laws in the Bible that were particularly good when a group of people, traumatized by slavery, were forming a community as they wandered vaguely towards a promised land through the desert. Law helped them to live together and establish relationship to one another and to the God who had called them to freedom, but they didn't actually know that well yet. But in the days of Jesus, the law had grown way beyond what was necessary to help community flourish. In fact, often it had the opposite effect. It divided people. It had taken over their lives. God was locked away in the temple, and the law kept everything under control. But the law remains something to be obeyed, not loved. Faith, on the other hand, is something that we actively participate in. It can't be imposed on us. Faith, then, is part of our choice. And we're choosing what we put our faith in all the time. Whether it's a particular make of car, or the bus company's timetable. That's not such a good one to put your faith in, I don't think. Or a particular political party, even. Whether it's the bank to hold our money securely, or the tax people to act fairly on them, or that water will emerge from the tap when we turn it on. Faith is about relationship, and who we put our trust in is based on a number of factors to do with our experience of life, our values, what we've witnessed in action, and sometimes sheer stubbornness. Jesus' baptism is all these things. And it marks the end of his anonymity, his early part of life, and the beginning of his calling, a choice to accept his calling. In spite of John's protests, Jesus chooses baptism. And the response is one we all share in. The Spirit hovers over the water again, as at creation, and as Jesus emerges, people heard the voice of heaven utter such beautiful words. This is my son, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Just to prove that God is a northerner. Words of relationship. Words that send Jesus on his life's work. Words that mark the beginning of a life given over to bringing people into relationship with their maker. No longer law, force, but love, choice. Jesus' baptism affirms his relationship with God and his relationship with us. He was the one who would show us what God was like and invite us not to a set of rules, but to a way of life. Not to law, but to faith. So Jesus steps out and goes on his way. His next road will be through a wilderness. For us, well, we have this pool. It's always there. This reminder always of water and the way it represents our life, full of good and bad, full of choices, the offer of a new beginning and a call to action. And it's a reminder of the voice that calls to all to be loved. To follow Jesus and to know ourselves loved. And that's, in a nutshell, or a pool, the story of our faith.